Hey, welcome. This is Final Cut Grill 035, and on today's episode, I am going to share probably one of the most fun I've had in an interview. I called up a good friend of mine, Steve Miller. Now, anybody who knows Steve Miller from the San Francisco Bay Area, you will know that currently Steve is a hardcore Premiere user. And I get, you know, people give me a hard time quite often saying that I'm just a fanboy, I'm an Apple fanboy, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I figured I'd put all of those comments, you know, to rest and just say, hey, look, you know, you want to talk about Final Cut 10? Let's talk with a Premiere user. And I want to say that this is not like a I'm going to convert Steve, episode. By all means, it is nothing like that. But Steve is an extremely intelligent guy. He knows his craft. He knows his tool. And frankly, I thought it'd be fun to catch up and, you know, see how he's using Premiere and After Effects. And, knowledge is good. Knowledge, is empowering. And anybody who's using any tool should definitely know about the other tools. And I will admit, I don't know very much about Avid, and maybe I'll do that episode another time, but every time I get together with Steve and chat, we just have a great time. As a matter of fact, you know, he does a lot of driving between California and Nevada and stuff, and quite often he'll call me, you know, or he'll let me know. He goes, hey, I'll be driving to Vegas Sunday afternoon. If you have time to talk, just give me a call, because, you know, as you know, driving in the car is a great time to talk. So, and many times we have spent, you know, hours on the phone just catching up about the industry and stuff. So at any rate, I want to share my friend Steve Miller with you. And he's not that Steve Miller, totally different Steve Miller. So enjoy this interview with Steve Miller from Steve Co. Is it me? Oh, hey, I had you muted.
Oh, okay. Well, that would make sense then.
Get out from behind the table. Everything's working fine.
Do I sound all right? I'm using my voiceover microphone for this, so hopefully.
Yeah, no, it sounds fine.
Good. Good. Because I can't hear myself. I guess I have to.
Oh, dude, I got to tell you, it took me like weeks to figure out a system that really worked. And even still, like,
yeah,
I only hear me in one ear and you in the other ear.
Oh, interesting.
Well, it's because I'm hard panning both channels so that one goes to the left and one goes to the right in case I want to like edit a little, which I do a fair amount of.
Yeah, I bet.
Because I basically suck at doing this.
Well, I mean, audio is one of those annoying things that we have to deal with right after the video, and I hate it, and I had to do a I had to do a piece where we actually brought some people into my studio here and had them sing a song, and I had to figure out how to create, I can't remember what it was called. It was like a virtual instrument or something, like, or virtual sound device.
Soundflower?
Or something.
Did you use Soundflower?
Well, no, it wasn't Soundflower. Basically, I used Adobe Audition and I created essentially like, you know, like in your audio input panel and your control panels, you can select, you know, microphone, built-in microphone, display audio, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
You can create a new virtual thing that includes multiple.
You use the audio video, the audio MIDI interface subpanel, didn't you?
Something like that, yeah. Yep. And basically, what I did was I created a virtual device that had two USB microphones attached to it.
Yep.
And so I was, you know, so that was, I don't know if you probably have already done that.
But
that
was. It's one of the ways I considered setting all of this stuff up. Mm-hmm. I went for a much more sort of traditional thing. And here's a little hint for anybody. Like, one thing that most people don't realize is, like you said, two USB microphones, you can plug multiple audio interfaces into a Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And that ends up being like the secret to setting up a podcast system, because you use like one device to go out and another device to come in so that you can adjust them separately. And I am using like an external mixer and all that kind of stuff. So
Right. Well, the other thing I definitely want to explore is if I were to continue to, you know, this grand idea I have of doing podcasting, I'd probably want to invest in some kind of an interface that has a non-latency headphone. Right. output in it, because I had an interface, some kind of an M audio thing that I bought a while back, but it was just, it was major latency in there.
It just makes you feel stupid, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's I think it's like a psychological experiment or something.
Oh, it totally
like,
is.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's like, you know, trying to be coherent while right. hearing yourself delayed by, you know, half a second in your ear. It drives
so
you
I'll nuts. Tell you the bare minimum setup, and it's really cool. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you go to digitalcinemacafe.com and search for the word guest.
Okay.
Basically what happens is I have like a rundown of like, hey, if you're going to be a guest, these are the minimum things that you have to do. I didn't bother sending it to you because I know you're wicked smart. Uh-huh. So basically there's a thing made by Shure called an X2U.
Okay.
And it is
X2U too.
Yeah, X2U, dude. It's XLR in, so you plug it into any microphone you own.
Uh-huh.
It's USB out. So you plug it into your Mac.
Yep.
It's core audio, so it just magically shows up everywhere.
Yep.
But it has a headphone jack on it. So now it is an input device and an output device. So the input is your XLR microphone into your Mac, and then you pipe that into Skype.
Right.
And then your audio – you monitor Skype out to the Shure device also.
Mm-hmm.
Plug your headphones in. There's a balance knob on it.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what you hear is what is being fed to the microphone or fed from the computer, and part of what you hear is your microphone directly. So there's zero latency.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
It is the hot ticket way to do it.
Yeah, no, I like that. I mean, the Blue Yeti is a really cool microphone that I was looking into.
That has a headphone jack on it.
It does. It has a non-latency headphone jack in it. And I actually have – Blue makes something called the Icicle, which is basically what you're talking about, only a really dumbed-down version. It has no output, and it has no headphone monitor. And basically, it's just a very basic XLR to USB interface with a little adjustment knob for levels kind
and
of thing.
That's basically what the Shure X2U is.
It sounds like the Shure has more stuff like monitoring and stuff. This Icicle thing has nothing. It was just like.
But didn't you say it has a headphone jack?
No, it does not.
Oh,
that's
okay,
the whole thing. So
that's why you want the Shure.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's definitely something I would definitely look into. Plus, I got like five old Behringer mixers over here that are doing nothing from back in the old Betacam days. And I'm like, yeah, I can figure out to do something with them.
Yeah. So anyway, I want to officially introduce – this is my friend Steve Miller. I've known Steve since about, I don't know, probably around the year 2000 or so.
Yeah, about that.
And he is – definitely goes down as the fastest editor I've ever met, and you scare me with some of the things that you show me. It's like, oh yeah, I only had 6 hours to do this. I go, what are you talking about? There's like 3 days of work there. And Steve and I were both, you know, hardcore Final Cut 7 users.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of cut of the same cloth, I would like to think. I think you're faster than me, but you know, we're kind of come from the same tribe, if you will.
I consider us very close peers.
I'm sorry to bring you down to my level.
No, I think our skill sets are very, very similar. I believe that wholeheartedly. You get more into the production and directing end of things, whereas I probably get more into the writing and producing end of things.
True.
Maybe,
yeah,
but
that's a good point.
But,
yeah.
But I think we do definitely equivalent projects on the post side of things, the editing and graphics kind of thing. So
what's been really interesting over this last like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is we both took different paths.
Yes.
And you have – and as I kind of figured you would, you totally dove into the Premiere thing because, you know, I mean, Steve in After Effects is like, you know, watching a fish swimming. And so it totally makes sense that you would go the Premiere path. But I, somewhere along the way, kind of went the dark side to the Final Cut 10 side. And so I've – multiple times been accused on this show of being too much of an Apple fanboy, and I thought, hey, I'm gonna blow that completely out of the water by having a Premiere user on.
As I think I said this to you earlier, but I am the Combs to your Hannity then at this point, or maybe the Hannity to your Combs, however you want to think.
So which was? Do you remember the what was the one? It was a Crossfire.
Oh yeah,
Crossfire.
Right. Right, right.
Please don't say I'm the one in the bow tie.
You can be whoever you want.
I probably would be the kind of bow tie, frankly.
Well, I mean, I am curious, though, because now, you know, and please forgive me. It's been a big year for me, and you know this. I've been very, very busy and stuff like that. I haven't had a chance to delve into your podcast or the commentary or anything else like that. So, I would very much like to. But what I'm wondering is your audience – is it made up of people like you who are Final Cut 10 aficionados, or are you getting a lot of people who are kind of on the fence still, or is it kind of 50-50? No,
I don't have any hardcore numbers. If I was smarter, I would figure out how to do some sort of a poll thing on the interwebs. But right. I think I can say this, that I am continually amazed when I'll get like tweets from people that are like, oh yeah, I listen all the time, but I use Premiere, or, you know, I'm like, wow, really? And I know even like there's a friend of mine, Dave Dugdale, who I'm going to see at NAB this week. Mm-hmm. He's not only does he use Premiere, but he uses Premiere on a PC and he listens all the time. Like I'll post a show that goes live at midnight Pacific time. And by like 6 o'clock in the morning Pacific time, now he's in Colorado, so he's like getting up and he's right. like, posting comments about what I just posted. I was like, dude, you don't even use a Mac and you're listening to this show. And so it's very interesting. And I do think that, you know, the show, I try to make it fun and light. Mm-hmm. And as much as we talk about Final Cut 10, there's always like workflow issues and, you know, just, mm-hmm. you know, how to be smarter, I think. And, you know, you and I have talked about this for years now about, mm-hmm. you know, doing a show, and I just got impatient waiting for you. So,
but you're fair. That's fair, man. I've been a little distracted this last year.
I know. You had a good year, dude. But I think that there's a lot of people that don't use the app. I think that there's a lot of people that are curious about it. Uh-huh. And my intention when I started it, and you know, I don't know if I told you this, but I was sitting in the office late one night and I was like screwing around and I was thinking about podcasting and stuff because, you know, I do the other show with Alex, the Digital Cinema Cafe, and he was getting kind of busy and I was like, I was just kind of like getting an itch to like, I want to do a show. And this stupid podcasting thing is so addictive. It's ridiculous. You know, it's just like, I mean, you know me. I mean, I'm always the one who won't shut up. You know, I mean, there's been many times when you said, dude, I got to cut. Get out of my suite. I'm like, okay. But so when you have like an open microphone and people are actually listening, it's pretty addictive. Anyway.
Yeah.
So I thought about it and I was thinking – you know, I had done an episode on another guy's podcast, Ron Dawson out of Atlanta, and I actually called, or I think I tweeted Ron. I said, "Dude, let's just get together and talk about Final Cut 10," because he had heard a podcast I had done like a year earlier with Carl Olson, and because of something that I said, he actually played with it, loved it, and totally switched over, like huge hardcore evangelist even. Mm-hmm. Because of something that I said on Carl's podcast. So I just said, hey, man, let's talk about Final Cut 10 for a while. So we set up a time. And actually, I think I was on one of his very last episodes because he actually has since not canceled his show. Mm. But and maybe it was Final Cut 10 that brought it down. I don't know. and so I was thinking about it. I said, I always enjoy talking to Final Cut 10 users. And so I thought, why not just record them?
Yeah.
And so I – like that night, the night I had the idea, I got on Twitter and I was like, hey, does anybody know any Final Cut 10 users that are doing something interesting? And somebody goes, oh, yeah, you should talk to this guy, David Fabello. He's doing a long-form doc. I was like, oh, that's a show. Mm-hmm. So I tweet the guy. He's in Texas. It was like 10 o'clock at night in California. So what's it, like midnight there? He's like, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm at the office working. I go, hey, would you be interested in talking about what you're doing? Yeah. When are you available? I'm available now. I mean, the guy must be a vampire. And so I contacted him, and within like an hour of the idea of doing the show, I was doing the first interview.
Wow.
So some people are just interested, and some people are like hardcore, like, I want to hang out with other Final Cut 10 users. I feel empowered. So it's a lot of it. But what I wanted to do I thought, you know, I just read some of the announcements just in the last like 24 hours mm-hmm. about the latest updates in Premiere. I was wondering if you had seen any of those, and if you have you looked into them?
No, I have not. Unfortunately, normally I didn't see Creative Suite didn't give me any notifications that I needed any updates today.
I think that's because they're not actual updates, but they're pre-announcing for NAB. Okay. You know, I think they did it last year. It's like, hey, here's some of the cool new stuff coming.
Right. Yes. No, I bet I was out of the office all day today. So, yeah, I'm terribly underinformed here. It's like, I don't listen to your podcast and I haven't heard anything about it. What's NAB?
Okay, you know, it's yeah, well, that was our show. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next time. No, yeah, I think what we should do, you know, because we can do anything we want. Let's go Adobe Premiere CC April 2014 update. There's got to be a list of stuff someplace. Here we are on Adobe TV. I don't want to watch it. I want to read it.
Yeah, it's probably on the Adobe homepage. This makes riveting radio here, I bet. This is
I cut stuff like this out a lot.
I hope so, yeah.
Two idiots on the web.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
Well, I will say this before we start to delve into – the rest of the updates and everything else like that. Yeah. I want to address something that you had said earlier, which was you kind of assumed that I was going to jump into the Adobe thing because I did After Effects. I enjoy using After Effects so much. And I think that definitely was a big impetus for trying Adobe or trying After Effects. I think the bigger impetus, though, was the fact that I already owned it. You know, I didn't have to buy anything. I didn't. It was a zero risk, trial.
The investment was one double click.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And when I and that was probably the biggest thing, and the fact that you know Final Cut 7, it is effectively dead. It's a zombie, really. It doesn't, you know, it'll still run and it kind of looks like it used to, but it's like, you know, pieces are falling off of it and it doesn't quite move as fast as it used to. The writing was clear on the wall that Final Cut 7 was on its way out. So I figured I better start trying stuff because. You know, I got a business to run. I got projects to do, and of course, you and I dibble dabbled in Final Cut 10 early on when it first came out. And I know that it's a very different application than it was when we first started playing around with it. I think you definitely and me to some extent as well are in a different mindset about it now than we were at the time. I think there was just that kind of major shock when it came out. Like, this isn't Final Cut 8, you know what I mean? What is this? You know, it was so radically different from Final Cut 7 that we were, I think everybody was kind of in shock. Yeah. And, and we didn't quite know how to react to it. That coupled with the fact that I already owned the Adobe suite of applications, as most people who are in professional post-production do, it was kind of a no-brainer to at least give it a shot. And the thing that amazed me was, you know, I fired the thing up, and I'm pretty quick grasp on things, pick things up relatively quickly, or you know we kind of have to in our business. But
dude, you sell yourself short. You pick things up plenty quick. Yeah.
Well, the thing was the learning curve was so shallow because the way I've described people, because I still have people coming up to me all the time on this last show that I was on. One of the corporate guys we were working with was there, and he has his own little edit suite at the company that we were working for, and he was asking me about Premiere because he was still using Final Cut 7, and
shocking. Every time I hear that, I'm like, ugh, really?
Dude, you'd be amazed.
I know.
Amazed.
I would just today, I was working a room away from a guy who I have great respect for, cuts a mean timeline, and I made some comment about, oh, yeah, every time I open up Final Cut 7, I feel like, you know, I'm visiting a museum. And he just looks at me and he goes, still my favorite editor. Okay.
He's not alone. There's a plenty of people out there who are still using it. And the way I describe Premiere to them is it's Final Cut 8. I mean, basically the interface.
I say that all the time.
I might have stolen it from you. Probably did.
No. A lot of people do it. But I mean, I say it, frankly, I say it in a little bit of a derogatory way. Yeah, if you want Final Cut 8, go for it, man. It's called Premiere Pro. But I'm on Final Cut 10.
Yeah.
a little smug there. I totally agree. Yeah.
Of course. But as far as why I went the direction that I went, that pretty much sums it up. And the fact that
So basically what you're saying is you were cheap and lazy.
Well, yes, absolutely. I am certainly not going to deny that. But also, like I said before, I have a business to run. You know, I am the engine in the car here, and I don't have time to really, at the time that the apps came out, I didn't have time to switch over and completely immerse myself in a brand new
metaphor
or anything else like that, because I had way too much on the calendar to do.
Totally understand.
You know, and so when I found Premiere, it was so much faster and it was so much more stable and it had so many more advanced features than what I was used to, i.e. Final Cut 7,
right,
that I was like, the learning curve is super shallow. I already own it. I can even XML out the projects out of Final Cut 7. They come into Premiere relatively okay.
Yeah.
It was kind of a no-brainer because I just kind of said, all right, well, this is going to get me through the stopgap because Final Cut 7 is too flaky. I need something to at least get me through. I'll revisit this in a year and see how I feel about it, because by then Final Cut 10 will have been updated a few more times and see what happens. Well, obviously – you know, I
so when have, was that? You said you would check in another year. How many years ago was that?
That's a good question. No, it was not last September. It was the September before that. I remember specifically the project I was on. So it's been about a year and a half. And gotcha. I did indeed check back. I mean, I bought the new, what is it, 10.1 or 10.2 or whatever they're up to now at
this
point.
10.1, yeah.
Yeah, 10.1. I mean, I bought that and I played around with it and everything, and there's plenty to like. It's just there are some core features that Premiere has in it that I have gotten very, very used to.
Right.
And that work so well with my Bass Ackwards workflow that you have seen before. You know, things that make sense to me and the way I like to work, Premiere does it. Final Cut 10 does some of it, but not as much as Premiere does
tastes. I have said this many times, and you know, I'm going to go out on a limb here, very short limb, because I pretty much know the answer to this. But I would imagine that the round tripping and send to After Effects is one of the things that you glommed onto the most. Yes?
At first, absolutely. That was like the holy cow moment that I had.
It's pretty cool.
It was like, it was just wonderful to be able to do that. Now, there are downsides to that. And for people who don't know what we're talking about, or maybe people who
Dynamic linking, is that what it's called?
Yes, it's Adobe Dynamic Link. It's basically like this little background process that runs in the background that connects. You can basically just describe how it works. You have clips in a timeline, in a Premiere Pro timeline, whatever they are, video clips, stills, you know, whatever you want, even audio files. You select those clips and then you say, I usually right click and pull down the little menu and say replace with After Effects composition, which is a weird way to state it because it sounds like it's going to ask you to find an After Effects composition to put in place of those clips.
That's a good point.
It didn't make any sense to me at first. And I was like, well, okay. So then what it does is if you don't have After Effects open in the background and with a project open, it will open After Effects, it will create a new project, ask you to save that project, and then put all those clips into the After Effects project and open up a comp that is exactly those clips in that comp with the timing preserved, with the cuts preserved. Everything is exactly the same. They just kind of took it from the Premiere timeline and put it directly into an After Effects comp. There's no XMLing. There's no automatic duck, nothing. It just appears in there. And then you can go ahead and manipulate that. If it's a green screen, you can apply green screen key to it. You can make it move. You can apply color correction, whatever you want to do. When you go back to Premiere, in your Premiere timeline, in place of those clips that you selected, there is now a single what looks like a clip, and it is the After Effects composition that's linked directly into the sequence. And so that is live. You can actually, if it's not too complex or if your computer's powerful enough, you could actually play across it. It is not rendered. It is drawing everything live as if it were in After Effects, but it's just in the Premiere Pro timeline. And when you render the Premiere Pro timeline, which they call previews, which is another very had me scratching my head for a while.
Right.
When you render in the timeline, it renders the After Effects comp as well.
And I didn't know that. Has that always done that, or as long as you've had it?
Yeah, well, I take that back. It does not create a discrete movie. It just renders the whatever
it basically ram previews it.
Yeah, essentially, but it does render it. I mean, it's part of the render files. Next time you open the project, the render files will be there, just like in Final Cut 7.
Right.
What's nice about it is, excuse me, is you can then, if you have a change to make, somebody decides the font isn't right or they want it to be, you know, battleship gray versus military gray, you can go back in there. You can just go ahead and edit original. Yep. Once again, I usually right-click this. Edit original on the clip that's in the Premiere Pro timeline, and there it is. It opens up that comp in After Effects. You make your little change. You go back to Premiere. All these changes are live, and everything updates, even without you having to save the projects. I mean, everything just kind of constantly updates. Right. The other neat thing you can do is you don't have to send stuff directly from Premiere into After Effects if you don't want to. If you've been working in an After Effects project and you have some comps from a project or multiple projects, which is actually what I've been doing recently, you can import specific comps from After Effects projects into a Premiere Pro project and then use them like video clips. So you can
that's almost like having multiple Premiere projects open at the same time.
Yes, it is.
Which is something that I've always wondered why we can't do that.
I know. Final Cut 7 did it. I don't understand why Premiere doesn't do it. I was used to that with After Effects because After Effects never let you do it.
Actually, can you open multiple Premiere projects at a time?
You can't, but what you can do is you can import – if you want a particular bin or set of clips or whatever, yeah, you just go ahead and import and then navigate to the project that has those in it. Gotcha. And it'll give you a little snapshot of what's in the project, and you can import specific items or the entire project if you want to into your current project.
Gotcha.
So essentially, I like the way Final Cut 7 used to do it because you could pick and choose and you could literally drag and drop stuff from one project to another
and then save it
and everything was cool. Can't do that with Premiere, at least not as far as I've seen, but you can definitely do it manually. You can go find the Premiere project, import whatever you want, and bring it in. You can do the same thing with After Effects. If you have a After Effects project and you've done all the titles in it and you know, oh, I want to bring in this one title comp that I built, you go in, find the After Effects project, say import, and then it'll show you all the comps that are available to be imported. You select the one you want, you bring it in, it just pops into your Premiere Pro project panel. And you can use it just like a video clip. And then you can go to a different After Effects project and say, I want this one or that one or whatever. And they're all live.
Let me ask you a question. I got that. Now, I'm making some assumptions because we haven't worked side by side in a while. Right. But let's say you have job folder 1, 2, and 3. Okay, 3 totally different jobs. Now, job 1 is the one that you're currently working on, but you want to access a lower third design from number 2, and you want to access, I don't know, maybe a bumper graphic from number 3. Okay, so you do your little import thing. Let's say those two elements, that lower third and that bumper, have, you know, PNGs or EPS files associated with them.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically now creating, and maybe you're not, but I would assume, knowing what I know about After Effects, that you are now creating a little virtual spider of connections to all of these assets that are in possibly 3 separate job folders, which would mean that all 3 of those job folders have to be mounted when you open up that Premiere project, or it's going to go, oh, I can't find that EPS logo.
That is correct. That is correct, and that's why you have to be very careful when you do these kind of things because, you've gotten that bit. But the good news is it will tell you it can't find stuff, and it will even give you a little file path as to where that thing existed.
So it tells you how to find it. Good.
Exactly. Oh, that's good. So of course, I don't know how much you've harped on this on the podcast, but proper project organization is the key to any good project. Doesn't matter whether you're working in Final Cut or Premiere or Avid or whatever. Sony Vegas. Yeah.
You know, I talked to a guy. I don't know if I told you this. I talked to a guy a while ago, and he goes, I use Vegas. I really like it. And I looked at him. I said, so you're the guy. So you're the one.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know.
It's the first time I'd ever met somebody that said, yeah, I love Vegas. I use it all the time.
Somebody told me I had to export some files to somebody who was using some sort of a new tech project. Or I'm sorry, new tech product of some sort. And I don't remember what it's called. But it was something I had never heard of before. I had to go look it up. It was like, okay, be damned if I can remember it.
Was it an editor or was it an editor. Clip player?
No, it was an editor. Really? It was an editor, and it was some kind of – it was. I'll have to find it later.
I'm getting an idea for a new podcast.
But did it have the Kiki wipe? That's what I want to know.
I know. Now,
anyway, there are plenty of people out there using plenty of different things, and that kind of brings me to another thing. I don't want to get off on that.
No, go ahead.
So the After Effects thing was definitely a big plus for me, but it isn't – these days, it's not the biggest reason why I use Premiere.
Biggest reason? First, it was cheap. Second, it was there.
Yes, exactly. And third, the After Effects,
dynamic linking.
Dynamic link in there. I think what I like about it now is that it is not QuickTime based.
Yes.
And the Mercury
playback engine.
Yeah, and I did not realize just how important or how convenient that was
I think you and I had lived so long with all of the gamma shift issues that QuickTime created and how you would kick something out of After Effects and then you'd drag it into your Final Cut 7 project and you go, yeah, that looks a little different. Well, okay. You know, I mean, we forgot – we didn't realize how bad it was. And I can even remember one day – this would be about, I don't know, 8 years ago or something. And I sat down one day and I go, you know what? Today's the day. I'm going to figure out this gamma thing. And I worked on it and I searched on the Google and everything. And then all of a sudden I realized, oh, it can't be fixed. It's just broken.
It
was all the QuickTime thing.
Yeah. I mean, it was the fact that QuickTime Player 10 is such a terrible application that has so many head-scratching and, you know, it kind of things associated with it. Like every time I try to open up a ProRes file? It says importing. Have you gotten this thing where they have the little status bar going across? It's like a lot of formats don't just open in the player anymore.
Have you noticed that Quick Look doesn't work on most files now?
Yes, I know. Especially whatever they did, the Flip for Mac Telestream stuff does not work in Quick Quick View anymore either, and that kind of annoys me because
the issue is and this is interesting because so Adobe was about depending on how you look at it, Adobe and Apple were pretty much on the same path of saying we have to kill QuickTime. Now what Apple started doing is they created QuickTime 10. And QuickTime 10 isn't built on QuickTime. QuickTime 10 is built on AV Foundation. Okay. Now, in the Premiere world, Adobe's like, well, we're not Apple. We don't have to call it QuickTime. We do whatever we want. And they built their own playback engine, the Freddie Mercury playback engine, that does all the real-time, you know, rendery, you know, bitching stuff. Okay.
Right.
And Apple was like, yeah, that's okay. You do that. We're kind of working on our quick Final Cut 10 thing over here. So, but QuickTime 10 came out first. And yeah, it's a head scratcher. And yeah, why can't I export? And yeah, why can't I JKL? Which, by the way, QuickTime 10 does do now, JKL.
Oh, does it?
Okay. I ran into it like totally by accident. And I was like, oh, wow. Because I did it by habit, by force of habit.
Right.
So so then as Adobe was, you know, building the Mercury playback engine, Apple came out with QuickTime 10, again, built on the AV Foundation, which is kind of like a marriage between the desktop video player and the iOS video player, because the iOS is built on AV Foundation and always has been.
Okay. All right.
So now if you go back, do you remember when I first started using ScreenFlow?
Yes.
So ScreenFlow, one of the first third-party apps that I know of, and I could have this completely wrong, I'm sorry, but it's the first one that I noticed that was built on AV Foundation. And that's why you could like do amazing real-time stuff in ScreenFlow. And it just worked because they had said, you know what, QuickTime, be gone.
Right.
You know, think about like iShowYou or Snap Z Pro, those two bastard, awful, horrible programs for screen capturing.
Right.
You know, and those were totally built on QuickTime. Yeah. So ScreenFlow was the first app that said, nope, we're going to abandon QuickTime, use AV Foundation. And I actually know people that do all of their – they even edit their videos in ScreenFlow. You know, they do like tutorial things and they have on-camera bits. Mm-hmm. They go, yeah, just bring it into ScreenFlow. It'll be fine.
Oh, interesting.
So now QuickTime, Final Cut 10 now, back to our show here, is also built on AV Foundation. And that's why you get such amazing performance out of Final Cut 10. And not to mention back at, I guess it was 10.08, I believe, maybe, when they said, when they funneled all of the rendering over to the GPUs.
Right.
And you know, I don't know if you probably weren't following this, but there were some people that were reporting that that iteration alone, that there were certain processes that were that people were clocking at 3,700% faster than the day before because they were funneling stuff into the GPU.
Right.
So two separate paths, Premiere and Final Cut, and both dealing with two major things, giving up QuickTime and leaning on the GPUs.
Right.
And not to mention, of course, 64-bit. So you get those three things and just a different path that they both have come to. And, you know, obviously I dig Final Cut 10. That's why I do the show here. But you know, I was using Premiere before you were.
I know.
And I was like, dude, you got to check this out. You got to check this out. And and then, you know, I had some issues. I had some pretty serious issues, and I had to step away from it. And right about then was when you were like, yeah, I'm going for it. I was like, oh, okay, careful.
Well, they've made that just like Final Cut has made mass stride since its first iteration. Premiere Pro CC is a completely different application than Premiere Pro Creative Suite 6 was.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously the interface is the same or very similar, but I mean the stability enhancement and the speed enhancements and the interface. I think Adobe has done a very good job of listening. Excuse me, to previous Final Cut 7 editors primarily in bringing back features that they did not – or creating features they didn't have and bringing stuff back that we from Final Cut 7 really, really liked. For instance, they just did this. I don't remember which version of Premiere. One of the things I loved about Final Cut 7 was to be able to select a clip in the timeline and with option arrow up and down, be able to move it up and down. You couldn't do that in Premiere until I think one or two revs ago where they put that back in. That's clearly something that's a bunch of us were asking for. And there's a you know, little part on the website where you can just type in whatever you want. It's not like it's not going to appear overnight, but it is. But
wouldn't
when
that
they
be
do,
awesome?
It would be nice. Yeah, exactly.
I just built my own edit system. One trouble report at a time.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, but they are very responsive to it.
They absolutely are. And you know, I've had chats with Al Mooney multiple times from Adobe, both at the SF Cutters meetings in San Francisco, and also he was a guest on Digital Cinema Cafe, like I think the first week, even almost a year ago now. And I will absolutely say that Adobe is absolutely winning when it comes to responsiveness and interaction with the public. You know, I mean, if you said you were going to do an editor's retreat in Kalamazoo, Michigan on a Thursday night at 9 p.m. and you invited Al, I bet you he would show.
Really?
You know, I mean, that guy, he's all over the place.
Well, it's a big – that's the difference between a software company and a hardware company that creates software.
Totally.
I mean, you know, Apple is making Final Cut Pro 7, 10, whatever, not to make money off of the app. I think that's largely a break even. If they make any money off of it at all, it's probably not a huge amount of money. They're doing it to sell Macs. They're doing it so that people buy the new Mac Pro or buy a new souped up iMac or something like that. Adobe has nothing but – the software to sell, and they're cross-platform, and basically the only thing they can do, it's like the old commercials, you know, we're number two, so we try harder kind of thing. You know, they're gonna be out there listening to people because software's all they got, and now that they are a subscription model, they need to be especially careful with that because if people think, well, geez, why am I paying 40 or 80 bucks a month, depending on whether you own CC or not before, CS6 before, why am I paying you 40 bucks a month for an app that hasn't been updated in 2 months or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And they're Johnny on the spot with the updates. There rarely does a week go by where I don't see at least some minor and oftentimes some moderate updates to the programs that I use. They are just all over it. I must make it murder to try and write a book about how to use Premiere Pro because they're changing it constantly, which is great for us because they're updating things that need to be updated and they're tightening down all the bolts and everything. But you know, I think that's the difference. They need to keep you on the hook. They need you to keep buying the software. Apple, once they've sold you the Mac, well, all they have to do is sell you the next Mac, you know, in a couple of years or whatever it is. And so they just have to keep that's not to say that Apple hasn't been responsive and hasn't, you know, updated their software too. It's just I think Adobe is on it more than Apple is, and they're a lot more evangelistic about it because it is their bread and butter. You know, if Apple decided tomorrow, God forbid, to just cancel Final Cut altogether, it would not affect their bottom line barely at all, I don't think.
It's not a big component to their quarterly earnings report for sure. I will say this though, you said something. You just said that. I can't remember how you said it. I will say this, and you know, I don't normally talk. Well, I guess I do talk about this. You know, I do have a few very close friends that work in Apple. Very close friends, and I don't get any insider information from them at all. Primarily because I don't push it, I don't ask, and I even tell them flat out, hey, dude, if I ask you how work is going, I'm not asking you to give me the keys to the kingdom or tell me any trade secrets. I'm just asking you how work is going, you know?
Right.
But I will say that these people are insanely passionate about making a great application. Mm. Like, it's you could say, yeah, you know, they're just an iPhone company that happens to have, you know, a piece of software that sells Macs. And frankly, the evidence that you see to the public, it very much could look that way because they don't get out in front of the public. There is no Al Mooney equivalent only because the Apple corporate rule dictates that they can't speak to the public. Right. I know people that would love to get in front of audiences every single week and tell, you know, about a great feature or a great thing or dispel a rumor that's inaccurate or just plain wrong, but they're not allowed to. So from the outside, you could look at it and go, yeah, they're just trying to sell Macs because that's exactly what it looks like. Uh-huh. I'm told, you know, hey, don't talk about blah, blah, blah. But I'm just going to say that I know these people and they are insanely passionate about making a great tool.
Well, and that's
and it's really encouraging. And I really wish some of these people were, you know, they'd take the muzzle off and let them speak publicly.
Okay. Now, you bring up a really interesting point because this was one of the things, and I wrote that little piece for your website a couple years back about you know, Apple, and it was full of a little more vitriol than I have for Final Cut.
Right with you, absolutely.
But here's what's troubling is, you know, Apple behaves the way they behave, and they do the things that they do, and we all buy the products, and I love Apple too. I'm an unapologetic Apple fan. I would never think of using a different computer. I have had every single iPhone, even after drowning the last one on my honeymoon after a week after I got it. You know, I've had everything, but we as video professionals are a finicky, cranky, vocal group of people.
Yeah,
we want to feel like we are being taken care of. Yep. We want to feel like our voice is being heard. We're prima donnas is really what it amounts to. And it's true. I mean, you know, we want, you know, we are very vocal and we feel like our, you know, voice needs to be heard. When you're a company like Apple and you're forbidden from doing that. You know, like the, like you say, I have no doubt that the rank and file guys slaving over the keyboard coding Final Cut 10 are passionate about what they do. They wouldn't be where they are if they weren't. I mean, it's pretty clear Apple weeds out the bad people, the bad apples, so to speak, and, you know, and pretty quickly. So no doubt they're at the top of their game, and no doubt they're good folks. But Adobe has made paid more attention to the professional users, I don't want to say egos, but the way we like to think of ourselves. You know, they're Apple, as opposed, Apple gives you this kind of, here's our product, like it or lump it. You know, and if you say, well, lump it, they go, well, you're wrong. It's the way we're going, and it's the way the industry's going, and that's it. Buy a Mac. You know, I totally agree with you. Adobe says the exact opposite. Here's a website. Here's my thing. Tell us what you want. Oh, you don't like that? We'll go ahead and we'll make a way to change that for you. You know, and you want to improve this and improve that? You ask him for this feature? We're going to get right on that. Are they actually doing it behind the scenes? Based on what I'm seeing, they're updating things quite a bit. So it isn't just lip service. They're in the business of servicing professional users. Because if you're just some punter out there, a hobbyist, you're not going to want to spend $80 a month on a program. You know, that's a lot of money to you. You're going to use iMovie or you're going to use whatever it is. So the people who are subscribing to Creative Cloud are people who are in the business, people for whom $40 or $80 is like, oh, really? That's all it costs? Well, sure, give me two seats. You know, that kind of thing. We're people who are that audience, that vocal audience that wants to be heard. And I think Adobe has done a better job of that than Apple has, insofar as just image control, as far as PR goes. And it makes me sad that Apple dropped the ball on that. But that's just not the company that Apple is today. And see, the problem is you and I are old enough to remember when Apple was that company, when it was a little
for every user in 1997. Yeah, you know,
like back in the mid-90s and stuff. And, you know, like when it was just, it was nothing but creative professionals bought Macs. And, you know, everybody else just went to bought the cheapo PC if they even had a computer at all. You know, Apple used to be all about the professional users. So you can kind of see why people go, oh, they're just an iPhone company. Because they've changed the way that they pay lip service to professional users, but I don't think they service them the way professional users want to be serviced. And that was disheartening to me when I saw that. But you know what? I'm over it. I don't think of Apple as my personal, you know, like software valet. You know what I mean? They're going to do whatever is most profitable for Apple. And if they keep cranking out the quality of products that they're creating, fine. You know, clearly they're doing it right. They know better than I do. But here's the thing. If I have money to spend and I have so and so much time and energy to put into something that I'm going to have to sit in front of and use for 10 plus hours a day, 5 to 7 days a week, I'm going to put my time and money into a product that I believe has my back, that is being created for people like me. And I don't want to lockstep to something that I don't believe is the right direction to go.
Right.
And that's
okay. So let me ask you a question. Yeah. Let me ask you a question. So there's two sides to this coin. There's reality and there's perception.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's the reality of what is happening and there's the perception and how you feel things are happening. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with what you're saying, that Apple's public persona is standoffish. It's very Willy Wonka, you know? Yeah. Trust us, the Oompa Loompas are working hard. You don't get to talk to them. They're not going to go. They're not going to be part of the Macy's parade. Right. They're in the factory and they're working. It's very much, I mean, Apple of the 21st century is very much a Willy Wonka mentality. Mm-hmm. But I feel, and this is, and only because I've spent the time to, you know, kind of peer behind the curtain, if you will. Mm-hmm. All the stuff that you're saying that Adobe does very well publicly, I see it. I see the same stuff happening on Apple's side. They're just not getting out in front of it and talking about it. I see the complaints. I'll give you a good example. This is actually quite interesting, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before. There's a guy by the name of Richard Taylor. He's been a guest on Final Cut Grill a few episodes ago, and he runs a website called, I believe it's fcpx.tv. Mm-hmm. And on Richard's website, he has a list of like the top 100 things he would like to see changed in Final Cut 10. Now, what he does is he has tons of illustrations. He even goes so far as to say, put a button right here, and that button should do this. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, he also keeps track over the last several iterations of the software, and in his list of 100, he has had as many as 17 of them be implemented in the next iteration. Mm-hmm. You know? So, like, they're totally listening, dude. They're totally listening. They just don't have anybody to stand on stage going, Steve Miller, I totally heard what you said. That's a great idea. We're going to start working on it. Yeah. And so there's the reality of what is happening, which I see is equal to what Adobe is doing, except there's the perception because they don't have the public persona. That being said, I completely agree with you. I wish they had the public persona. I would love to have I would love it if Stephen Bays could speak publicly about the issues that people are having. And frankly, hi, Steve. I know you listen. I know you're sitting on the bus right now on the way from San Francisco down to Cupertino, and you'd ride on the Apple corporate bus and smile right now. And I've told you this many times, it needs to be different. It really needs to be different. It would be great for Apple. It would be great for Final Cut. And it's a shame that the corporate culture is just so tight-lipped.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all. I think you're spot on with that. I think the biggest problem that they're going to have at this point is they have lost a lot of people, Chris. I mean, they've lost a lot of people. I do travel a lot. I do a lot of editing on the road, and more recently, I hire and manage editors on the road, and I can tell you, this is no word of an exaggeration here, not one of them that I've met is using Final Cut 10 in a professional capacity.
Right.
Not one. And I meet probably two editors a month on average on all different skill levels, and not a single one of them uses Final Cut 10 that I've met.
And that's why I started this show, because the Final Cut 10 editors that are out there, they're hiding under rocks. And frankly, I talk to people all the time. It's like, dude, it's so nice to be able to just talk about this publicly without the fear of somebody looking down on me like I have leprosy or something. You know, I mean, I was just in Hawaii and I got to work with Steven Luksic, who was a guest on the show a couple episodes ago. Uh-huh. And I got to tell you, man, this guy is a monster Final Cut 10 user. And he's currently training people in Hawaii on the island of Maui. And I said to him, I go, hey, you know, we have a job coming up and, you know, we need about 3 or 4 Final Cut 10 editors. Is that even possible? And he goes, dude, no problem. I can get you 10 guys. Huh. So I'm telling you, I hear what you say. The people that you're dealing with, not one of them is using Final Cut 10. I promise you, over half of them have it, and some of them are playing with it. I promise you. And because I talk to people all the time who are just like, I just don't talk about it.
Well, see, I've seen kind of an opposite reaction, because a lot of these editors that I see are either moving to Premiere or they are still using Final Cut 7, and these are pros. These are pros. They are getting paid. They are busy editors. They're not, you know, they're not just some dudes who we hire to, you know, do stuff. And you know, they make money with the apps. And when they look over my shoulder and see the kind of stuff that I'm doing with Premiere, I've sold more than one of them on Premiere by them just going, oh, geez, I had no idea it did that. Or, wow, that's just like Final Cut 7. Or, that's Premiere? Oh, my God, that's great. You know,
okay. So, dude, hold on. Yeah. To say, oh, my goodness, that's just like Final Cut 7, that makes my skin crawl.
Well,
I don't want anything to be like Final Cut 7
anymore.
Well,
I mean, here – And I don't either from a performance standpoint, but I do believe and you know, let your audience vilify me all they want. I do believe the metaphors are
tried and true.
Better, well, I, tried and true, yes, but they're better for my workflow. And you know, they have not changed very much between Final Cut 7 and Premiere Pro. Yep. And I like the way things are laid out. I work most efficiently that way. It is the way all the other applications that I use work. It is kind of the industry standard insofar as how other programs approach things. You know, if you know, tomorrow Chevrolet created a car with the steering wheel on the roof, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a better way to drive. It just means it's the way they've decided to put the steering wheel on the roof. And if you're the kind of person who likes the steering wheel on the roof, good, buy a Chevrolet.
Right, right.
If you're not, buy a Ford. And that brings me to another point. And there's only a few people I can actually have this conversation with.
I know. I love, you know, it's so funny. I'm sitting here. The people who listen to this show all the time are mm-hmm. probably laughing because I am famous for cutting people off and stepping on people. And I'm looking at the audio waveform of the recording, which, by the way, I do in Adobe Audition.
Oh, okay.
And
good program.
And your waveform is just solid. There's nobody that's ever been on this show that can keep up with me. So it's awesome. Go ahead.
Well,
keep talking.
I appreciate that. Well, here's the thing. We also have the advantage, disadvantage of being old. And we remember when – in order to do the same stuff that you can do with iMovie, yeah. you had to have a room full of equipment.
Two rooms.
And about $500,000 at the minimum, yeah. okay?
Yep.
To do a dissolve, you needed a switcher, a record deck, two playback decks, edit control, all this other stuff. I mean, basically, you needed an entire room full of stuff to do what we can do with Premiere, or I'm sorry, with iMovie.
And with a tweaker in his pocket.
Exactly. You know, and stuff. So when we started.
Oh, there's a word for you. Tweaker means a totally new thing these days, doesn't it?
Well,
wow.
The thing was, when you bought an edit system back then, you committed to it. You were limited by it. It was not limited by you.
Right.
Okay. Today, you can use whatever edit system you want, and the barrier of entry is nil compared to what it used to be. You know, if you have a decent credit card, you can have a massively powerful edit system in your second bedroom, and you can have Adobe Premiere and Final Cut 10 and Avid Media Composer and all these things running on the same system at the same time if you want to.
And
if
be
you
attached decide, to the internet. If you remember back about 15 years ago, it was like, oh, don't plug that machine online.
Yeah, God forbid, right? Now the machines are the same. It's all software-based, so we can pick and choose the tools that we want. And the nice thing is if I decide tomorrow that Adobe is not the direction I want to go and I like what Final Cut has done – done. I switch. I don't have to do a thing. I own them both. They're both cheap. I just switch from one to the other. If I decide to switch back to
next week. A lot of people I talk to, they mm-hmm. look at the job and they go, oh, I'm going to do this in Premiere. Oh, I'm going to do this in Final Cut 10. As a matter of fact, somebody I just talked to, Christopher Hawking from Australia, Late Night Films. I just talked to him last night, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Release dates, whatever. On the last episode of Final Cut Grill, we spoke with Christopher Hawking from Australia.
Right.
And they are at the stage where they're like, yep, that should be an Avid job. Yep, that's going to be a Final Cut 10 job.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Totally. And it's just like, which little icon in your dock do you click on?
Right, right. And I think, you know, where we lost a universality with Final Cut 7. Final Cut 7 was kind of like when you sent somebody else an edit project or if you brought in an editor you'd never worked with before, you knew with 99% certainty that if it was in Final Cut 7, you were going to be able to use it.
Yep.
Okay? They were going to be able to open it. They were going to be able to sit down to your edit system and work. It was kind of the universal tool for everything with the exception of like markets like Los Angeles and New York where they're still Avid-based and largely still are Avid-based. But long and short, with the kind of stuff we do, largely corporate and commercial work, you know, local commercial work, we lost that universality with Final Cut 7. But the nice thing is we don't need it anymore because everyone can have everything and they can decide what they want to use for one way or the other. You know, there's no – what really frustrates me is people who continue to use the wrong tool for the job just out of spite. You know, it's just, you know, it's like, you know, and it's, and, you know, it's like, oh, I hate this, you know, Android phone. Well, why don't you get an iPhone? Oh, I won't get an iPhone. Apple. You know, but I hate this and I hate that. Well, the iPhone doesn't have those problems, but it's Apple and I don't want it. I'm going to just keep it using. I mean, basically that has been a problem that I've seen with a lot of people, especially rabid Apple fanboys,
right.
You know, that they'll just keep saying it's better, but secretly they're going, well, on this project it really wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot, and this is the other thing that frustrates me, is a lot of people always praise Final Cut 10 for being so fast. It's so fast. Oh my God, it's so fast. I'm sure it's fast. So is Adobe Premiere Pro CC, because they're both 64-bit apps and they both leverage the GPU. So speed is negligible at this point. Okay, there's some things Final Cut does faster. Some things Premiere does faster.
To a certain extent, I will say that, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, and you know, we both you know, found this document. We were going to talk about it. We won't now, but because we didn't need it. We don't need a script. We have our, we have our mouth holes to speak out of. One of the things that, you know, it was really interesting when maybe it was CC, when they added the hover scrub.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it was funny because Al Mooney was at SF Cutters and he goes, oh, here's a great feature. And he hovers over an icon and he goes, yeah, well, let's just say some of the other features are pretty cool. I understand what you're saying about 64-bit and GPU and stuff. I think when you talk to people that are really into Final Cut 10, and I've spoken with a lot of them now, the speed is not a hardware issue. It's not – they're not speaking about the performance of the hardware. They're talking about general workflow things. And I'll just say this because I know you haven't listened to all these episodes that I've recorded because, you know, frankly, you have a life. But I will say that a lot has been said over the last 45 episodes or whatever it is. 35? I guess it's 35. I'm thinking of the other show. That a lot has been said about the issue of workflow. And I've had this conversation with several people where we talk about, you know, you hear the phrase all the time, well, that doesn't work with my workflow. That didn't work in my workflow. I couldn't use it. It doesn't work in my workflow. That doesn't match my workflow. It doesn't work. It doesn't match my workflow. And yet so many people have said, and then I got into it. And then I got over, and you know, you talked about Premiere having a shallow learning curve. I have always said that Final Cut X has a very steep learning curve. I call it the learning wall. You have to get over the wall. But when you get over the wall, it's downhill all the way. And and all of a sudden you're like, wow, this is amazing. I talked with James Miller the other day, and he said, I started a project in Premiere. It totally screwed me over. I lost my project file. All my backups were corrupted. I said, screw it. He threw it out. He launched Final Cut 10, and he said 6 days into it, I was 12 days into my edit. You know, and it's more than just the performance of the hardware. So in regards to the workflow thing, so many people have said to me, when I look back at the way I was working, I'm astonished that I thought that was good. So the workflow thing, a lot of us want to sit here and say, this is me. This is the way I work. It has to be this way. And if you can't build me a tool that works the way I work, then I'm not interested. And yet, time and time again, I hear people say, I can't believe I work that way. I can't believe I thought that was the way to go.
Well,
that being said, I hear what you're saying, and I totally get what you were saying about, but, you know, I had a minimum amount of time, I had to make a change. Final Cut 7 wasn't working.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I have no doubt that you've heard those kind of things.
Also, I want to say one thing that I didn't say in the beginning of this.
Uh-huh.
I in no way thought that we were going to have a little chat tonight and you were going to be launching Final Cut 10 in the morning.
Oh, no.
But I have always appreciated our conversations. I agree that the level and depth that we can go into nerdy stuff is it's a pleasure always to speak with you. So anyway, I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that, and maybe I should have said that an hour ago.
Oh, no, no. And I, you know, I frankly – you know, you and I have talked, being as busy as we both are, we've talked about, you know, doing a meeting of the minds here and letting us stare over each other's shoulders and seeing these workflows. I have no doubt if I looked over your shoulder and looked at the stuff you were doing in Final Cut 10, I would probably see it with different eyes. And I would like to think that you would see Premiere with different eyes if you saw the kind of stuff that I was doing with it, like in person, you know, like fly on the wall kind of thing. And that's why I think it's good that we're talking about this on a show that is largely listened to by, you know, to both people. Here's my feeling on the kind of anecdotal evidence you were talking about. You've talked to people who have said that. You know, I've heard people say exactly the same thing about Premiere. They've said, I tried to open Final Cut 10 and they hit your learning wall that they talked about, and they just were kind of like, my brain doesn't work that way. I don't like it. I didn't like what it was. Da 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 da. And then I opened Premiere, and wow, it was all the stuff I love about Final Cut 7, but with all the improvements that 2014 brings. And so many people have kind of gone, it's wonderful. This is exactly what I wanted. And I've known a few people who have tried Final Cut 10, given it an honest try, and just didn't like the way it worked for the way their workflow does. Anytime I buy something,
you said it again. You said it again.
Yeah,
for the way their workflow goes.
Well, but that's the thing, Chris. You if you give the other workflow a try and you don't like it, it's not your fault. Okay, it's not. Which is what I think Apple implies with the way they market things. If I try, I'd like to think I'm a pretty intelligent guy. I work constantly, so people must like what I do.
Absolutely.
And I've been editing
I'm going to say Steve Miller is a monster at a keyboard. And so, dude, if you are. Absolutely, you're seriously one of my favorite editors.
Well, I and the feeling's mutual for sure. If I have given it what I feel to be a fair try and I don't like it, then I shouldn't be persecuted or looked down upon or ridiculed for not changing the way I'm thinking, you know, because like I said, everybody can have every tool today. So if I want to use this tool the way my brain functions most normally, it isn't because my brain is wrong. It's just this is the way I prefer to work. And that's what Adobe has always done. Everything has always been infinitely customizable. I mean, when I opened up Final Cut 10 and it didn't allow me to move windows around where I wanted them or put toolbars where I wanted them or anything else like that, I kind of said,
tag,
wow.
I'm out.
Yeah, well, no, because that's the way I want to do what I want to do. And it's not that I couldn't learn it. If all of a sudden Adobe went bankrupt and there was no other way to edit, I'm sure I could pick up Final Cut 10 and I would be speedy on it at a certain point and everything would be fine. But because we have those two options, I choose the one that best works for me. So I don't necessarily, and I know this is not what you're saying, but other people who are Final Cut 10 fans have said this. They're basically saying, well, if you don't change your workflow to Final Cut 10, then you're wrong. You're old fashioned. You're an old fogey.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Not true. Absolutely not true. Plenty of people out there who are doing extremely innovative things that prefer the workflow the way they have it. And Adobe's workflow, I believe, is more flexible for more people than Final Cut 10.
That is actually a very good point.
Okay.
And that's something I don't think I've ever heard anybody specifically say, that Adobe is very comfortable at creating a flexible user interface.
Yes, and a flexible work experience in general. And here's the other thing. You know, you were talking about the anecdotal evidence. You know, you and I could sit here and swap stories about people who like Final Cut or like Adobe. When I buy something I've never purchased before, I don't care what it is, pair of shoes, toaster oven, whatever it is, when I go on Amazon to buy that, I don't look at the 5-star reviews and I don't look at the 1-star reviews. I look at the 3-star reviews. Huh. Because those are the people who are going to be saying, okay, here's the pluses, here's the minuses. They're not, and there are way fewer 3-star reviews than there are 5-star or 1-star. Because when people feel really strongly one way or the other about something, really they're good. More than happy to tell you about it.
That's really
so,
good.
You know,
really
the dyed in the wool Final Cut 10 people are ready to grab the pom poms and the bullhorn and go rah, rah,
and
rah.
And again, this is why I wanted to have Steve on the show, yeah. Because I get accused of being that guy.
Well, I don't think, and knowing you the way I do, you're not that guy. You do analyze these things. And for you, you believe that Final Cut 10 is the product for you, and you've done the research and you've done the homework. So I would because I know you, I would trust you. If I didn't know you, maybe it would sound like that. But I can tell you, you know, you've paid me a compliment. I pay you a compliment. You're not easily convinced, and you don't just follow the bandwagon for bandwagon's sake.
Right.
If you've said you would like it, and I respect your opinion on that. But you know, here's the thing. Since we can both have the same, tools and stuff, I don't think we have to make a choice. I don't think we can, I can sit here and tell you all the great things I love about Premiere, but I also have some things that I hate about Premiere. Some things that just have my head scratching, things that are not particularly intuitive, and things that I think do need to be updated. You know, but that's the 1-star reviews.
Yeah.
You know, and then the 5-star reviews are, I love this, I love that, I love the other thing. What I want to do is the 3-star reviews where you go, okay, you know, this is what needs to be improved. This is the kind of thing you're going to like. This is the kind of thing you probably won't. But, you know, if this is the way you want to work, then this is a great tool for
Dude,
you.
Dude, I think we should start a Adobe Premiere podcast.
Well,
I've actually had people tell me that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would definitely, here's the other thing though, Chris, and I'm real curious once again, the listeners to see what they have to say about this. I listen to a lot of podcasts, as I know you do, on various different subjects.
Not anymore. I make a lot of podcasts.
Yeah, you don't have time to listen to them. You're making them.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I listen to, and there are some on subjects that I am not well educated on that I listen to learn something.
Right.
And then there are others that I'm very well educated on that I listen to just to hear other people talk about what I'm, you know, what I like,
right.
You know, just to verify that, yes, I was right or no, I was wrong kind of thing. But here's the thing. I just don't know. I don't know if me giving you my take on this helps anybody out. I think everybody has to kind of find their own way with this stuff and decide on their own what they like and what they don't like.
Here's what I think about that.
Okay.
We are by nature, human beings by nature, we are a tribal species. Okay? We don't work well alone. Okay? And because of that, there are different types of people in the tribe. There are leaders, there are soldiers, there are hunters and gatherers, there are carpenters, there are gardeners, and there are video editors, okay? In our tribe, luckily for guys like you and me, otherwise we'd be hungry, there are video editors. And I think that the reason why it's a valid thing is that you know, you're a smart dude. I absolutely respect your opinion on stuff. And every time I sit down and I talk with you, I hear about our tribe from a different perspective.
Yeah.
And the reason why it's nice to have these conversations is that there are many people that good grief. I'm sitting here thinking about this. I go, I hope this doesn't sound condescending because it is. I don't mean to be condescending at all. But there are many people that need to hear both sides of the argument kind of vocally. They want to hear, you know, both the pros and the cons. And that's why I think so many people have said, not a lot of people, but I have had a few complaints that say, you know, I'm a little too much of a fanboy, a little too much of a Final Cut 10 fanboy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that putting the conversation out there in the public, it's one of the easiest things that we can do to make our world a lot smaller. You know, yeah. I am constantly amazed at how I get tweets from people from, you know, Germany, England, Australia, Singapore. Hey, can I be on your show? I want to be on the show. You know, when can I be on the show? And it's such an, first of all, it's an honor that people like even know who I am, and they but they want to share their story, you know? And and I think that in a lot of ways, you know, the screen of our laptops has become, you know, the campfire of our tribe. And we open up our laptop or we turn on our iPhone and, you know, maybe we're, you know, doing the Leo Laporte thing where we listen to podcasts while we mow the lawn or do the dishes or whatever he always talks about. Mm-hmm. You know, but that is our, it is our campfire. It's our 21st century campfire. And we come together and we share our stories. And by doing so, we all learn and we all better ourselves. And I think that's the reason why I think, you know, podcasting just in general is such a mind-blowing thing that I can sit here at my little IKEA desk with my little microphone and my $15 mic stand, and I can share that view, and I can share it with anybody in the world who chooses, you know, to listen. And all they have to do is slide up to their own campfire and tune in the right channel.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. No, I have no doubt it's fun. I no question at all. I guess, and I, you know, I understand what you're saying. And that, like I say, there are plenty of podcasts that I personally listen to for just that reason. I just want to hear people talking about this stuff. And if I glean something great, if I don't, it just kind of entertains
me. Does it drive you nuts when you are listening to something that you do understand and you hear people just open their mouth hole and just a bunch of idiot stuff comes out?
Well, see, yes, and it does bother me, and it's funny because I don't know if you remember this. I don't. This might have been. No, I think you remember this. I got many, many years ago. I had a little partnered with a friend of mine and we did. The training DVDs at the time.
DVDs and were awesome.
Yeah, for those listening at home, DVDs were these things that you can now use as coasters. And we were doing these demos, I was specifically doing them for I don't want to say the name of the company because I don't know what happened to the domain and I have no idea what's going on. But we set up this little thing, and I was doing demos of Final Cut 7 and
Rod actually, back then I think it was 6 or even maybe five. Yeah,
Final Cut Classic, yes, as you've called it. And Rod was doing another program, and we, you know, it wasn't as easy to comment on it back then because we're easily talking 10 years ago here. You know, it wasn't, we didn't have a comment section on the website. It was just very kind of one-sided kind of thing. But the feedback that we did get was either one of two things. The stuff that you're doing is stuff that's so above my head I can't understand it, even though they're entertaining and I kind of get what you're going for, or that isn't the way I would have done it. Okay. And, yeah, and that's the thing, you know, like when I started online editing back in, you know, 93 or whatever, when I rode my dinosaur to work, I asked the chief editor at the time who was there, you know, how should I do this? How should I accomplish that? And he said, there are 5, 6, 7 different ways to accomplish any one thing that they're going to throw in front of you in this room. Whatever way works for you is the way to do it. That there's no right or wrong way. There's just whatever works for you.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of truth to that, but there is also a fallacy to it. Mm-hmm. And the fallacy to that statement or that comment is, do you fully understand, when somebody asks you to do step one, do you fully understand where he is going to be at step 10, and are you picking the right choice at this? Yes, there's 6 ways to do it, but I promise you one of them is going to end up being more efficient.
Right. No. That the efficiency is not what we are talking about here. Accomplishing something, because you have a client standing behind you, tapping their foot, paying what at the time was probably $3,000 a day to sit in that edit suite and get stuff done. And if you start to crack open the manual and consult the Oracle every time they ask you for, you know, a dissolve or something, they're going to get really angry. So whatever gets the project advanced, however you can figure out a way to get the project done, is quote unquote the right way to do it. If you want to delve further into things, you should, because if you're going to call yourself a professional, you should do things the most efficient way that you can. And I think that's a lot of the times when I'm listening to podcasts like this, I do pick up little workflow tips and little like shortcuts. And, you know, you are the king of the keyboard shortcut. I've learned so many keyboard shortcuts from you. You know, that kind of stuff is the kind of stuff that I feel is the next level. But when you're in a business and you're just getting, you need to accomplish this stuff, or you don't even have to be in a business. Let's say you're a hobbyist, you're a kid out of high school or in college or something like that, and you're making a documentary on your life's work, just the thing that you were put on this earth to tell people about, and you're having a conundrum as to how do you do XYZ. Well, however you can accomplish XYZ is the right way to do it, because it gets your message across. Okay. The only time that you should delve, you know, or I shouldn't say the only time, the next time you do it, and if you're going to be doing it on a regular basis under different circumstances like we as professionals do, yes, you should get more efficient. You should learn why, not just what.
Right.
Okay. And that's very, very, very important. However, I will say this, and I'll give you the exact example. I had to do a programmed DVD menu one time.
Yeah.
That had like a, what do they call them, stories or something like that, where it was just like, if you click this button and then it would play this, but if you've already clicked the button, it would play that. And then if you got to the end of this, it would go here, but unless you've watched this first and all this other stuff. And it was one of those kind of things where I started to try and figure out the why, and I went, I'm never going to use this again. Right. I just want the what. I don't want to know why, because I don't want to clutter my brain with this, because I'm never going to use it again. So I think people will figure out the why for things that they do often. A lot of times they just want to know the what for the stuff that gets them to the finish line.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, the way we are, I mean, let's face it, you and I, we do the same stuff quite often. And with years of experience, you know, more than 20 for you and a little bit less for me, because I didn't start editing until I'd been in this business for at least a decade or so. Mm-hmm. You know, we see the path. It's like, you know, this is the classic business for the phrase been there, done that. Mm-hmm. You know, and you look at it and you go, yeah, you know what, kid, you're more than welcome to do that. And you can come to me in about 3 days and I'll explain to you why you should have listened to me right now. but yeah, go ahead, kid, knock yourself out. I'll see you in 72 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true. I think having covered what we covered, we didn't get into a lot of technical detail. I think we talked a lot of theory on this show.
Dude, this has been, I didn't tell you this, but about, I think, when was it? How do I find that now? In my Twitter thing. I while we were talking, I actually tweeted something a few minutes ago, and I said, actually it was about a half hour ago, and I said, currently recording an awesome episode of Final Cut Grill. I can't wait to share this with you guys.
Well, I would love to do another one, and maybe we should wait until you and I have had a chance to look over each other's shoulders for the next one, because I think if I were a listener, I would want to hear, okay, what are the five things that you and I both agree that Final Cut 10 does better than Premiere, and what are the five things that we agree that Premiere does better than Final Cut 10, or and vice versa.
That would be interesting,
because I think the nuts and bolts kind of stuff actually. Well, I don't know, maybe, you know, but I would be curious to see what your listeners thought about that, because maybe they don't want to get that deep into it.
It's interesting this week. So I'm going to release this show at midnight Monday morning. You know, essentially this week. And I will be, you know, deep into NAB at that point. Tuesday evening at NAB, I'm actually sitting down with Dave Dugdale, the one I mentioned, who not only does he use Premiere, but he uses Premiere on a Windows machine, which I don't understand at all. But basically, he said, you know, he is basically sort of kind of thrown down the gauntlet. Not really. He's giving me a project. He's giving me raw media. I've never seen it. I know what it's about, but that's all I know. And we are meeting in the DCC hospitality suite at the Vidara, and we're going to set up a little system. I'm probably just going to do it on my laptop, and he's going to set up a couple of cameras because he's a nerd like that. And basically, he just wants to see me edit. He wants to see my mind, and you know, I'll narrate and I'll explain what I'm doing. And but it's interesting because you know, Dave is first of all, Dave Dugdale is like one of my heroes. I love this guy, and he runs such a tight ship. He's got such a great website, and he does, you know, great videos, and he's I call him like Uncle Dave. Like everybody likes Uncle Dave. He's your uncle that every but one of your friends just loves hanging out with. And that's actually going to be really fun. But that'll be interesting because he's a Premiere user and he's a Windows user. And I'm going to sit down with my little Retina and I'm going to show him how I cut a piece. So it's kind of half of that story. But I agree. I would love to do that with you. I would love to carve out the time, and we should do this. You know, we'll do another one of these chats in a couple of months and see how it is.
For sure.
And I will say we have now hit a mark where this is the longest episode of Final Cut Grill, and and all of it good. So, I have one marker where I coughed or something, or I might take that out, or I don't know what happened. But I want to thank you for doing this. I know we've been talking about doing this, and seriously, I'm totally serious. If you think you might want to do a Premiere podcast, we might want to add that to the DCC network. You know, we got a little thing going over here. So,
I'd love to if I can figure out when. Absolutely, I would love to do it.
Yeah.
And there are things in play right now that may give me the chance to do that. So we can talk about that offline. But it was my pleasure, and I hope I look forward to hearing the commentary, because I would really like to see if I'm off base here with the way I'm thinking of things, or if people are, you know, I would like to at least think, like I said, under the premise that we can all have everything constantly, I would like to see if there are people who are willing to give Premiere a try again if they haven't tried it already, and see if maybe for some stuff they like it better than Final Cut 10. Just because, like I said, we can have it all. We don't have to choose. And that's what's beautiful about this.
And I just want to go on record one last time. All you people that say I'm a Final Cut fanboy, you can shut up now, because we just talked about Premiere for an hour and a half. So there. Hey, Steve Miller, thanks for being on the show. You've been grilled.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll talk. Actually, you know what? I usually do a separate little recording thing. Just hang on here for a second.
Yeah.
First of all, I just want to say, everybody, thank you so much for listening. I cannot tell you. I say this all the time, but I really mean it. It is so touching to see the comments that people leave on iTunes. Tell your friends. Share the word. You can tell them that we're not fanboys over here. And I promise you, this is going to be a huge episode. I just know it. So leave your comments for Steve. You can find Steve. I think he's on the Facebook. You don't do the Twitter thing, right?
Well, I have a Twitter account, but I think you're my only follower.
Actually, I think the reason, Steve, you have a Twitter account is I made that Twitter account for you.
And you might have. No, I think I might have signed up for it, but you were definitely my only follower at this point. Okay, let's hold off on giving any kind of contact information for me, because my website is currently in flux. I'm going to remain in the cave right now, but soon I will have contact information for
all
people.
All right. Well, at any rate, it's Steve Miller in Northern California. He's a monster. So anyway, thanks, Steve. And thank you for listening. And we will see you next time. And actually, enjoy NAB. Find me at the Post Perspective booth. If you're looking for me, I'll be there Monday and Tuesday afternoons. And if you're interested in sitting in on the Dave Dugdale edit demo, tweet me. If you don't use Twitter, you're not going to be able to find me. Tweet me, and you may actually get a personal invite. So thanks for listening, and we will see you next time on Final Cut Grill. Later, later.